Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Sunderland drew this weekend 1-1 in the FA Cup, which means we're all going to have to brave the cold on a Tuesday night, probably next week, which is really annoying, to be honest. But anyway, you know, we'll go, Nick obviously gets paid to do it, and I'll go out the goodness of my heart, and so will Gav. So yeah, disappointing 1-1. But Nick, how are you?
Well, I'm, you know, a bit angry about it all, really, because I told Jack Ross afterwards it's Tuesday night, MasterChef Professionals. I'm going to have to watch it on the iPlayer now. So that's my Tuesday night gone.
Fair enough. Yeah.
No, I mean, in all honesty, I'm pleased they're still in it. They could easily have been knocked out.
We'll find out the draw on Monday, which will be interesting. Who are we looking for?
Well, preferably, do you know, Benno and I were chatting on the way home about the potential draw and how, you know, a year or two ago when Sunderland went in at the third round stage, it was always Barrow at home or Morecambe at home or. And you thought, great, home draw against a non-league or lower league team. Well, now it's Monday night and you're thinking, actually, I don't want Morecambe or Barrow or someone like that at home. You want one of the big Premier League teams at home. And it's a complete switch around from, you know, your wish list from a couple of years ago in the third round of the FA Cup. Because then you're actually genuinely thinking you could have a run in the FA Cup and you never knew as a Premier League club how far you were going to get. Now it's almost a case of, this is a bonus, and if you can get a big club in the third round, well, that's great. That'll be a, you know, added bonus to this season because we're not going to reach the final this year. So, I just hope it's, in it, for everybody's sake, it's a big draw, which at home, which gets a big crowd. Just give everybody something else to enjoy in this season.
Do you think that fans of a League One club, if they got drawn against, say, Everton, would fill the place out, whereas we have played Everton for 10 years. Is it possible we might be like, don't really care?
I don't know. That's a good one, Everton. I'm not sure. If it's one of those Premier League clubs, which like an Everton or a Huddersfield, a Bournemouth, something like that, probably not. But I think if it was Arsenal, Tottenham, Man United, Man City, any of those, yes, I think it would. I think that everyone would.
And I think we
owe to come back for that.
We owe it to the players, don't we, to give them that League One sort of big cup tie feel at the stadium.
Yeah, well, I actually had a conversation with Benno as well. I threw this at him. I said, Benno, if Sunderland drew Newcastle United at home in the third round of the FA Cup, who would win? And there was a sort of silence in the car. But Benno, you know, he said, look, in all honesty, he said Newcastle should win. That they, you know, they've got so much more quality. They're a Premier League team. But I just thought it's an interesting dynamic because the way Sunderland are at home, they haven't lost at home in the league. You know, the Sheffield Wednesday game in the cup was so early. They've got a real character. They've got a real team spirit now. I wonder if it, you know, that would be a potential upset in the way that Newcastle are at the moment.
It wouldn't be an upset. I mean, we always beat them.
Well, we always beat them, but it would be interesting. It would be a very interesting tie.
How was your day yesterday, Gav? You were down at the game.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to introduce myself eventually.
I was gonna say,
we've got nearly, what, 4 minutes in? You haven't even said I'm here.
So I'm hogging.
So I'm Gav, by the way. Man. Yeah. How was my day? That was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. That's a weird day for a long time. I don't get enough of them.
He gives a big answer and then you're just like, I had a great day.
So it was. When I went in, it's quite a little stadium. So when we walked in, it reminded us of going to Scunthorpe. Very similar looking stadium.
I think when it was originally built, it's an identikit to Scunthorpe Stadium.
Yeah.
And then Walsall added the second tier on end. So it sort of took it away from being the Scunthorpe. But at the time, I remember when Scunthorpe built Glanford Park, and then the Bescot Stadium were built, they were absolutely identical. Mm. You went in and everything was in exactly the same place. And then it's moved now because Walsall's got a new press box. I use the term loosely. But so, you know, they've made a few adornments to it and it's changed a little bit. But yeah, essentially they are exactly the same.
I never knew that. When I walked in, it just looked like Scunthorpe's ground. But no, it was a long trip for a 1-1 cup draw at Walsall, but I really, really enjoyed it.
It was weird. It was like last week was the cup tie and this week was the league game.
It was a bit more like a pre-season friendly, wasn't it, if anything? We kind of petered out. I know we're going to how the rest of the game went, it was strange performance, and it was probably a good thing that majority of Sunderland fans didn't have a stream to watch because it was pretty poor.
As bad as that Checker trade game the other week against Morecambe.
No, I thought I actually enjoyed the Morecambe game more than I enjoyed the Walsall game. Yeah,
is that because
they
won?
Possibly. I just thought, and maybe because it was a few of the players in there that we've been wanting to see, and I think you appraise the game in a different way. You're watching Jake Hackett and Jack Bainbridge and the other young players and Jack Diamond, and you're sort of looking at the game in a different way, I think, and enjoying it from that perspective. Whereas the Walsall game, it was a complete opposite of the league game the week before, which had been feisty, it had been fiery. I mean, it's interesting that, apparently the stat was that Sunderland only committed 2 fouls in the league game at the Bescot Stadium, when I think they committed 2 in the first 5 minutes, on Saturday. And then it became a litany of free kicks and stoppages. And it was a bitty game. It wasn't one for the purists to watch, was it? It was just a typical league game in a way. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the atmosphere. It didn't have the drive of the game the week before. And a difficult one to sort of analyse in a way. I mean, I know afterwards Jack Ross said, I'd said to him, was he pleased, the last 10, 15 minutes of the game that they were still in the cup? And he said, well, it wasn't just the last 10 minutes, but this whole second half. He just felt that Sunderland just didn't turn up for the second half, and he put it down. He said, I think it's really caught up with us. I think we're tired. He says, I think we were seeing, a number of the players were leggy out there. It was a heavy pitch. I think Walsall came out and they zeroed in on Andy Cook and Devlin, the two big men, and pumping long balls up to Cook to hold up for Gordon and Ferrier. And it made life very, very difficult for Sunderland.
It was a data analyst's dream, that game, because you could see that from the week before, they just realised how bad our two centre-halves were in the air, and they got pummeled, absolutely pummeled. Probably just as bad as it was on Tuesday, I would say, against Kifamua, in the way that they just couldn't cope with anybody of any sort of stature in our box. And we were lucky, actually, that Cook's not a very good player, in my eyes, because he had 4 or 5 brilliant chances and he only put one of them away. Good goal, by the way, but he missed the majority of his chances, and a better centre-forward would have made us pay yesterday. And I put a bit on the site about this, and I've took a bit of stick today, actually, but I don't think that they're a very good partnership in terms of, I think they're too similar, Baldwin and Flanagan, that is. It's been a bit of a worry for a while, but I think we've really seen the last two games, like, anybody with any height in our box, the struggle like mad. I'm not daft enough to think that the manager doesn't see it, it's something to think about. Maybe when you're looking at Leuvens and Ozturk, could one of those maybe be reintroduced to try and counteract the fact we're being, targeted now? Teams are going to watch, especially anybody, a Dayton analyst looking at the last two performances, they're going to look at our centre-halves and go, let's get a big man in there and cause bother.
Do you think Jack Ross will maybe trial that 3 at the back he was doing with Glenn Leuvens?
I wondered about it, because that conversation about David Edgar, and he's prepared to give him a trial, and he's 6'4" and he's a big, bulky centre half. And I agree with Gav. I think there is an issue with the two, Flanagan and Baldwin, not having that physical presence, and teams are doing their homework. I mean, give Dean Keats credit. I mean, as soon as I saw he put Andy Cook on the bench at Portsmouth on Tuesday night, I thought there's only one reason he's done that. He knows he's resting him to play Sunderland on Saturday, because a big man in that area will cause problems. Kiefer Moore did it. Obviously, Andy Cook did it the weekend, and we've seen it so many times this season. If a team has a set piece or a corner, they just pump it straight in there, and 9 times out of 10, it causes a panic in the Sunderland penalty area. More so earlier in the season, they were really struggling to get the ball out. And because Flanagan and Baldwin have started to develop a partnership, they've sort of maybe papered over the cracks to an extent. But I think there's still a worry there. And I do wonder if they get a big centre-half in to play alongside Baldwin, and possibly, we don't know what's going to happen in January, but if Matthews was to move, Flanagan move out to right back again, or even left back, and utilise Flanagan where I think initially we thought he was going to play when he was signed in the summer, as a fullback rather than a centre-back.
Are we not being a bit hasty here in the sense that this was a centre-back pairing that kept, I think, 4 straight clean sheets? You know, everyone goes in and out of form. You know, that happens.
Yeah, it does. I think because of the Barnsley game and the Warsaw game, you know, in isolating them in the week, it became a bit of an issue. And I think now teams are starting to... I mean, as Jack Ross says about his homework, you know, you do all this homework and you're trying to second guess the opposition manager all the time. But at the moment, it looks like the opposition managers are tending to, if they've got, and most League One teams have got big players. Sunderland haven't. And if there's an Achilles heel in the Sunderland team, it's a lack of height and physical presence, which may be alleviated to an extent up front when Charlie White's fit. But it's certainly, you know, problem in midfield where it can either be overrun or League One teams just pump the ball over the top of it. And at the back where set pieces, that, you know, was a massive problem at the start of the season. And it's not such a big problem now, but they're starting to concede goals again, and largely in the situation where they're not picking up the big men in the penalty area.
I would say it is still a problem, but from another perspective in that, I mean, how many corners have we had in the last 2 games? And we've never once looked like scoring from them. I mean, don't think I'm picking out players. Yeah, I think that this is, if we want to go on and win the league, these are small improvements we could make in January, which could potentially change the course of the season. I think when Sunderland are playing with enough attacking intent to be able to force 10, 15 corners out of a game, and we don't look threatening from any of them, that's a problem. It's a big problem.
Do you think is it the corner takers that are the problem, or
no,
is it the lack
of
height in the box?
Lack of height, because it's the same problem we face at the other end of the pitch. There's the struggle to defend them and the struggle to get on the end of them.
And they can't pick up the second ball. The defenders are tending to pick up the second ball. I think the big thing is everyone says try and get the ball to Madger's feet. I mean, that's where the strength in the attack is. Madger with the ball at his feet, but 9 times out of 10 they can't get the ball into Madger's feet in those situations because you haven't got the big player in there to win the knockdowns and the players around the defenders to isolate Madger and keep, you know, because that's what defences will do. They will. I mean, look at Warsaw on Saturday with set pieces. They basically put all their defenders in the 6-yard box, made it almost impossible for anybody to get the ball down to feet and get through that. I mean, it was clearly a ploy and a tactic they'd employed to stop Sunderland getting the ball to Madger's feet or getting any sort of second ball picked up in the penalty area.
What about the midfield options? So Catamol and McGeoch aren't playing, then we've been playing Power and Honeyman, and then it was 0-9 at the weekend. Is it because we've lost one of them defensive midfielders? Catamol always wins that first header on a corner if it's at his height.
I think he's been a miss, yeah.
And do you think even set pieces, do you think defensively?
I think both ends of the pitch, like you say, is good in the air.
And so is McGeoch, I think, as well.
And I think maybe with game management in the last 2 games, we might have benefited from him on the pitch. For there was a spell against Barnsley where the end of the second half, the end of the first half, where we seemed to struggle with the pressure, and that's when Catamol comes into his own. And then on Saturday, I went in at half-time and I thought Walsall were pretty lucky to only be 1-0 down. And it was a totally different, it was like 2 different games. Second half, they come out and it's the other way around. They battered us. And I just wonder whether McGeady was the oldest player on the pitch at the weekend.
Captain.
And, and we're maybe lacking just a little bit more experience, I think. Because it was difficult for the lads up front, especially. With Madger playing, Gooch wasn't actually on the wing. We were basically playing a 4-4-2.
And Gooch was doing all this. Struggled again on Saturday.
Yeah,
I didn't think Gooch got into the game, really.
But he's up there trying to do all the dirty work so that Madger can just, you know, roam and play off the last man, I guess. But he struggled. He worked his socks off. He always does. But he doesn't seem to suit that position. He's better out on the wing, isn't he? Hugging the line and taking his man on. Which on Saturday, Brian Oviedo was the right-sided midfielder and he never hugged the line. He came inside every time he got the ball. Thought he did all right. Didn't do anything particularly great. But he just hugged the line. Didn't hug the line. He kept cutting back inside and playing it into Matthews or trying to look for Max Power on the edge of the box. And I just think it slowed us down a bit. So it would be nice to readdress some balance, maybe get a couple of players back in the next few weeks because, I don't know, we do a little bit stretching. It's not really helping us. Not really helping us to play our best game because you like to see likes of Gooch out wide. You don't want to see him drifting around the front line because it's a necessity because of the players we had. I mean, it was a shame. Maybe a different game if Maguire didn't get injured in the warm-up because obviously the plan wasn't for Oviedo to play. But there's plenty to learn from that performance on Saturday. I don't think anybody was poor. I think everyone gave the best shot. It didn't work out for the centre-halves at the weekend. I'm sure they'll learn from it. But I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Jack Ross because he now has to go into a game on Tuesday and try and rotate the squad when you think he hasn't really got many options, has he?
No, I don't think Max is at full power, excuse the pun, yet either. I mean, by his own admission, he said he played within himself on Tuesday. And I think, you know, and as Jack says, he's still, you know, he's still trying to get back to full fitness because he's not been playing. So he's struggling for 90 minutes to play 90 minutes. And I think we saw that with Power again on Saturday, but you know, Jack Ross was making the point again afterwards. They've got 9 games now between now and January the 1st. So the replay was one he could have really done without, but he will make a lot of changes on Tuesday. Watmore will start, Leuvens, Oviedo, I think, Ozturk, O'Nien, Power to get more minutes. So, you know, I think we'll see the Morecambe scenario where you probably see 11 changes or near enough. And it should still be, in theory, strong enough to beat a League Two team. But, I mean, it's going to be an issue for him, this 9 games over December and the beginning of January. Bearing in mind, if he's saying they're looking a bit tired now and a bit leggy, and if he picks up any more injuries, I mean, now you've got Maguire should be back next week, Catamol, Touchwood should be back, McGeoch. But, I mean, as you know, I said to him afterwards, you get a small injury like Maguire or, you know, Honeyman, the little, you know, the ankle injury. These little injuries, which we thought were little, like Robson and McGeoch, can sometimes turn into significant injuries that keep a player out. Catamol, the toe injury, kept him out. It's been out 6-7 weeks. So suddenly these can develop into quite long-term injuries, just as you're getting into, I think I heard, was it Guy Mowbray on Match of the Day last night saying, when you get to November and it's dark at 3 o'clock, you know you've got into the meaty part of the season sort of thing, which is where Sunderland are now. You're 19, 20 games into the league season, and that's without the two cup competitions. They are really in the nitty-gritty now where, you know, every point dropped is a huge point drop because there's that group of 4-5 teams at the top of the league now who are sort of really fighting each other almost to get a breakaway.
It's weird. At the start of the year, we all thought Sunderland's midfield depth, we almost thought we had too many central midfielders because you looked at it and said, where's Ethan Robson going to get in? You know, where's, insert the list of what six we have? And they've all picked up injuries, and it's crucial that we've actually had that midfield depth. Otherwise, we would have been, you know, we've had to play Honeyman in central midfield recently.
It's presented opportunities as well, though. So probably one of the big positives for me from Saturday was Barley Mumba came on and he looked really good. It was at a stage in the game where we couldn't hold onto the ball. We were just giving it away every time we got it. Walsall were building up attacks, particularly pumping balls in the box. And I felt we needed somebody to just come on and rat around them and try and win the ball back. And to be fair, he did a bit more than that. Bringing him on forced Walsall back 10 yards and we actually we seemed to come back into the game. There was 2 or 3 moments in the game where he had the ball played into him and he just looked like he was going to lose it, and his balance is that good. He's got I don't want to say he's anything like him, but he reminds us of the way Sessegnon used to hold onto the ball when he was under pressure. He just seems to wriggle away with it quickly. And that really helped us on Saturday. I think bringing him on when we did actually probably help level things out again. And
I mean, the irony is they could have won it in the last minute or so. They had a corner right at the death. And you thought, wouldn't put it past them to sneak one in, you know, when it dropped in the penalty area. But just it was one of those games, it just wasn't to be. I think, you know, you knew 15, 20 minutes from the end, this is increasingly going to be a replay. It was just that sort of written all over it.
Bally Mumba, talking about him there. Should he be playing a little bit more? A little bit more game time for him?
I think that you've got to trust that, especially looking at how Jack Ross has managed Madja this season. You've got to trust that he knows what he's doing with him, and he's just managing his time efficiently. So how many 17-year-olds have played as much football as he has? You know what I mean? I think they might even look in January and think he could go out on loan to somewhere for even just a month, and it'll do him the world of good just to get into a different club, professional environment again, training around different players, getting more minutes on the pitch.
Well, I think the only thing problem with the loan issue is he is 17, and I think there's still the issue of if he goes, can he room with some, has to room on his own still at 17?
I know Pickford went out on loan when he was 17.
I think that's been one of the issues before, because the responsibility they have to him, because obviously when he travels with the first team squad, he has to room on his own because of his age. And so I think loan was always a bit of a problem. But whether that still is now he's 17, I don't know. But I know you're right about Jack Ross has been very, very conscious about managing the young players and not throwing them in for the sake of it just because it's another body. I think his biggest problem almost has been it's finding the balance between he's got Bally Mumba training with the first team squad, and recently he's been named in the first team 18 at a weekend, but then that's sometimes precluding him from putting him into the under 23s and getting a game time in the under 23s because he's away with the first team. And he's got to find the balance between Mumba getting games but getting games at the right level, because he's clearly got the talent, he's clearly got the technical ability. And then you've got to worry about burnout if you throw Mumba in, say, right, we're going to put Mumba in the first team and he's going to play the next five or six games. Will we see that dip that you invariably see? I mean, we've seen that with Madja. You know, you throw him in, does well, gets goals, and then all of a sudden we get this dip with him, takes him out for a game or two, puts him back in again, and he's back up. I mean, Chris Maguire even suffers from it, and he's what, 27, 28? I don't know.
I think 29.
At this level, that's what it is, though. If you were consistently a 7 out of 10, you wouldn't be playing in League One. And that's the thing I've noticed is the quality of play. You know, look at, say, a player like McGeady as well. He can give you 10 minutes in every game and win you the game, but he's playing at that level because he just can't do it. He can't sustain it for 90 minutes.
Although,
the Premier League,
he's been playing the last three games. He's played, I mean, probably that was the poorest of the three games, but the previous two he played exceptionally well.
Yeah, he had played really well.
But then you can be cynical and say, January's coming up. Is he conscious that he's playing to get himself in the shop window?
I think Jack Ross is fairly blasé about all that, isn't he? He doesn't really care if he loses a player. Anyway, well, we'll find someone else, you know? So if that's what the case is with McGeady, then so be it. But I've been really impressed with him. I mean, I agree with you on Saturday. He's been better in the couple of games before that, but I still thought he was our best player. I just thought, especially the first half, he was absolutely brilliant.
Well, Jack Ross is enjoying it. He says the conversation he's had with McGeady and Matthews and Oviedo over the last few weeks, he says they're actually coming to him and wanting to talk football. They're infused. They seem to have got their mojo back. And I think we're possibly seeing that, although Benno was very critical of Matthews yesterday, felt that Matthews wasn't having a good game, and that if any player on the pitch, Jack Ross was probably pulling his hair out, it was Adam Matthews. But, you know, that's Benno as a defender, and I suppose he's looking at it from another angle. But
he basically played as a winger in the first half.
Yeah.
He had Oviedo as his foil. So Oviedo was obviously further ahead of him, but he was the one coming inside to try and open the space up so Matthews could get forward. And he's another I thought actually did all right. I think when we're under the cosh, that's when he's not at his best. He's a good attacking player, isn't he?
And I wish we'd see more crosses from Matthews as well, because Matthews can put a really good ball in the box.
He scored that goal against Millwall last year, where the guy keeper threw it in the net.
Yeah,
such was
right. Yeah,
but he's another player who seems to just found his confidence, and he's I don't think it's just confidence as well. I think you can breed confidence in the way you play, and how often have Sunderland in the time Matthews has been here played good attacking football? This is the first time probably, and it's about playing a system which gets the best out of the players you've got. Which is again why maybe McGeady's improved.
Well, I think as well that half hour against Barnsley on Tuesday night, I mean, if you're playing football like that as a footballer, you must love it. You must really enjoy playing that football. And for the first time in how many years, Sunderland have been doing it in sort of flashes this season in games. And if you're a professional footballer, you must love it. You must be loving the opportunity now that it's coming together. and Sunderland are starting to put together some, you know, displays like that, if they could do it more consistently, they would probably walk away with this league. But it just, the problem is they can do it when they've got a nice wide pitch like the Stadium of Light, and then they go to somewhere like Walsall where it's a narrower pitch, and you saw how heavy the pitch was yesterday. It had loads of rain on it, and they watered it. It was muddy, it was heavy, it was cloying.
I put a photo up before the game. The players were warming up in front of us, and it was like a ploughed field. It was awful. So it wasn't the best conditions for playing, you know, good football. It was tight. Didn't think it was a very long pitch. It suits a team who play long ball football, put it that way. So it did suit. It's obviously Walsall play a certain way, don't they? So it suits them to have a nice tight pitch. I'm enjoying watching the style change as the season goes on. So we started out, and it was a bit, I don't know, higgledy-piggledy might be the word, where against Charlton we had a few injuries, didn't win. It wasn't our strongest team, and we got away with it in the end when we managed to work hard and get the win. As the season's gone on, though, the style has changed quite a bit depending on who's available. And I think that this all leads up to January, and obviously anybody leaves, but obviously we've got players coming back. And I just think we're missing a couple of minor things. One would be a big, tough central defender who just gets rid of everything. And another would be getting Cattermole back in the team and fit, because he does a lot of work off the ball. And then on top of that, somebody to hit up front, because, I mean, I like Sinclair. He works hard, but he's not a goal scorer.
He's not quite sure what to do with Sinclair. He almost sees him as someone who, to quote him, plays the inside channel, because he's not an out-and-out striker.
Mm.
He's not really a winger. Does he sit in behind the front man? I'm not sure he's that sort of player, but is he more one to sort of work that channel, you know, where Alvieda was trying to cut into at Walsall? So you have an outlet in there, which Sinclair could benefit from. So it's difficult to fit him into the system at the minute. But again, you know, I think that comes down to a player like Sinclair, who has played more, he started or played in more games at Sunderland than all of his other clubs combined. It's just not used to playing football, if you like. And it's trying to find a way of getting him to play more.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we talk about Madja, like, he's still such a young player. But you forget that Sinclair is also really young. He's only 21, and he's probably played less football than Madja has. And
Definitely played less games than Madja.
So he's learning as well. That's not ideal for us, is it, really? I mean, I don't think the club are expecting Charlie White to still be injured now, and that's maybe why we're asking too much of them, to be honest. And that, it's been good to see him manage Madja more effectively than he has Sinclair. So he's taken Sinclair out, but he's taken Sinclair out because he hasn't really offered something in the game before. I think with Madja, he's our player, and he's used Sinclair more in the way that he probably will Wyke when Wyke's fit. So when Wyke's fit, he'll start the majority of games, I think. I don't think Madja will be playing every week. That's probably the best thing, really, in terms of his development. He's been managed well. And it would just be nice now if we can get a big man up front, big man in the centre of defence. And I don't think we're that far off.
It's almost a horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want to build a League One team to get out of League One and then look at the Championship in a different... You know, the conversation we could have next year could be completely different if they're in the Championship. And you know, it might benefit the smaller players in the team, because the Championship's going to have a whole different set of problems. But one of the problems in League One is that a lot of the teams have got some big players in there, and they're used to being physical and just throwing themselves. I mean, it's interesting being close to the pitch at places like Walsall, because you can really almost feel the impact when players are going into challenging each other, which is a bit, when you're sitting at the top of the West Stand watching a game played out on the pitch in front of you, like a Subutio game, because it's so far away. Suddenly, when you're right up close to it, you can physically feel the challenge, and it just, you see a different perspective to League One then.
It was good on Saturday how I was walking around, because obviously there was the pitch invasion after the goal right at the end in the league, and as we went in, I wasn't obviously at that game, and as I went in, I noticed how low the ledge was, and you can see how that happened. That's how, I mean, you take for granted just how massive our stadium is, because you go to a place like that, and within two steps, you could be on the pitch.
You literally could just step over the wall, and you're on the pitch.
Yeah, which is why they'd obviously learnt off the week before, and there was just a line of stewards waiting for Sunderland to score, because someone actually did get on on the pitch when McGeady scored, young kid. And
it was Mamba, wasn't it?
And after that, the kind of, like, all right, yeah, we need to take this serious now, because we could have a situation here where there's about 30, 40 Sunderland fans on the pitch at once. But it, Nick's right, you can feel the action when you're that close to the pitch. And there was one in the build-up of the goal, actually. O'Neill threw himself in to a challenge and we won it. We came off the better of it, but he got absolutely clattered. I could hear the impact from where I was sat.
Was the one that laid him flat out.
Yeah. He was out on the floor when we scored.
Yeah. Actually, Jack Ross made a point about Morecambe. I think it was Phil Smith said to Jack about how at Morecambe it was really refreshing that you, because you're so close to the pitch and so close to the players, you can actually hear the players talking to each other. And he said he was impressed by Max Power, because Max Power was shouting all the time to cajole in the team. And Jack said, well, I'm glad you heard that, because that's something you try and get across to fans, because when you're in the bigger stadiums, you don't hear it. He says, but you and your players like Max Power are doing that all the time. And it's another asset to their game, if you like. Then, you know, people sometimes think players are quiet, but they're not. You know, they're in there all the time, and Power is a big talker on the pitch.
Yeah, I thought the first 30, 40 minutes of the game, he ran it. You know what I really like about Power, as opposed to the other centre mids, is when the ball comes into him, he already knows what he's going to do with it. He doesn't hang on to it. He doesn't mess around with it. He gets it out of his feet and it goes where he wants. And that really, really helps the rest of the team, because the rest of the team like to play at a high tempo, but it tends to be the further back you go, the players, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what I liked about McGeoch in pre-season, because I thought he was doing that as well. But for whatever reason, the injury or whatever, he just hasn't quite got that rhythm back, because in pre-season, McGeoch was just constantly getting the ball, laying it off, bring it back, lay it off, push it forward. Always, like you're saying, that Power knows where he wants to put it, but always trying to chisel away at the opposition, constantly trying to keep the ball moving, which he hasn't seemed to do since he got that injury in pre-season.
Yeah.
I want to jump back to Madger. We ended up on quite a tangent there, so I let it run. But do you think Ross should have maybe thought a little bit more about playing Sinclair yesterday, because of the pitch, the conditions, the fact that, you know, Madger basically was always likely to struggle in that game? Do you think, you know, Ross should have went with Sinclair just to have that long ball game?
I think he's a bit between a rock and a hard place on that, because I think it comes back to the game prior to that, or not the Barnsley game, because he reinstated Madger. I think Jack Ross is his own man, and he would never bow to the fans saying, well, Madger should have started the Wickham game and not Sinclair. And as Jack Ross said after his hindsight's brilliant art, you know, yes, with hindsight, you know, but I wouldn't change any decision I've made on the basis of what I've learned after the game. I think he's so meticulous in his build up to games. And I think, you know, one thing that would clearly have thrown him on Saturday was the fact that Maguire got injured in the build up. Mm. He's worked all week on his plan, on his system, and then 10 minutes before the game starts, he loses Maguire, and he's got to bring Oviedo back into the system they were playing the previous week. And I, it's a difficult one, because I think I know what you mean about Sinclair. I mean, he's going to give you 100% in terms of the work rate he's going to put into the game, and he's going to chase everything down, and he's going to be a physical presence, but he's not going to give you that end product. And I think my feeling is that Jack Ross wanted it done and dusted yesterday.
Yeah.
And Madger offered him the better option of doing that.
And I also think that one of the ways that you work Madger in your team is as a player alongside him provides an outlet. So yesterday it was Gooch, but I'm not too sure that was the plan from maybe before Maguire got injured. Because if you think when Madger's went off the last couple of league games, Maguire's went up top and he's been the outlet, and he is a good outlet. I mean, he's not the biggest, but he knows how to hold the ball and he knows how to draw free kicks. And I think that was probably more so the thinking on Saturday was Madger's playing, but it'll be Maguire alongside him and Gooch will play on the right. Well, as it turned out, you know, Maguire got injured, he brought in Oviedo and Gooch moved him maybe into that role where Maguire was going to play.
And I think as soon as he saw the game in the second half was slipping away from them, Sinclair came on. I mean, he had no hesitation in making that change. I mean, I think that's where, you know, Jack Ross is generally quite astute. If a game is slipping away from him, he does try and make a change that, you know, tries to get it back on side again.
It's difficult for a move on Saturday because the bench wasn't particularly strong.
Wasn't strong when you've got Bainbridge and Hackett. I mean, no disrespect. You didn't have any game changes on there because you'd already lost one, and Oviedo having to start the game. And he already lost another in O'Neill starting the game. So there wasn't really, you didn't have really many options.
I haven't actually spoke about the goal yet. So before we move on to Tuesday's game, Nick, you're the commentator, so you go through the goal.
I've got to try and remember it now.
I was the videographer.
Yeah,
I've got to think about this one now. Crumbs, talk about memory loss. It seemed to build up on the right-hand side, and I think there's quite good work down the right side of the penalty to dig it out and put it back across the penalty area, where it eventually was knocked out to McGeady, wasn't it? Was it through Gooch and
Madger kind of got stuck in a tussle with the defender, but it occupied him and the ball went straight across.
Right, to McGeady. Yeah. And then McGeady, as soon as he got that sight of goal in front of him from that range, just smacked it in.
Do you think McGeady can keep this goal scoring form? Is he in like a purple patch, or do you think because he's playing, basically beneath where he should
be? You've got to think, though, when he came to Sunderland, he came off the back of a really good season with Preston. Where he was the main man, he was scoring or assisting most weeks. He was doing what he's doing now, really. I mean, last year he was pretty restricted. He was injured quite a bit.
He scored quite a bit of goals.
But even then, I don't think he was playing anywhere near at his best. This month that we've just seen from McGeady is probably the best football he's played since he came to the club.
So I think he's quite... I don't mean this, in a disrespectful way. I think he's quite a selfish player. I think the issue of the penalty at Plymouth...
Mm-hmm.
I think illustrated there's that side to McGeady's game, where Gooch clearly thought he was going to be the penalty taker, and McGeady, in no uncertain terms, took control of that, said, no, I'm doing it, I'm taking it. And of course, then against Barnsley, who strides up, and there's no argument about it, McGeady takes the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I think McGeady likes to be...
Centre of attention,
yeah. Is that good man management? It's like Jack Ross has to manage Chris Maguire. And the same way that he has to, I think, man manage McGeady. I think that was a very shrewd move to make him captain on Saturday and make him feel like he's the main man at the minute. And it's obviously paying off because McGeady's getting goals, he's working hard, he's turning out to be man of the match. If he can keep that going.
That's what you said there's the main thing, though. He's working hard. When has a manager ever got that out of Aidan McGeady, where he's sprinting back to make tackles and then going up the other end to try and start an attack off? I mean, I certainly can't remember. I couldn't say I've tracked his career particularly closely, but whenever he was, at Everton, he didn't really get in the team, and the consensus seemed to be that, he's got the talent, but he doesn't do it.
Go back to last season, and even early on in that game against Barnsley at Oakwell, where he's on the halfway line and just lazily gives the ball away and Barnsley score.
Yeah.
And how many instances of that did we have last season where McGeady was clearly not in the zone? He was in his own world where I'm McGeady, I'm a brilliant player, I don't have to work because I've got it all naturally at my feet. Actually, he does have to work and he does have to put in a shift for the team and he does have to track back and he does have to defend. And actually, Jack Ross has seemed to get that out of him this season.
Quite a bad memory you just brought up there, that Barnsley game. It was horrible.
I was on a stag doing Leeds and we'd been out all day and we said, right, we'll put the phone on while we're getting, because you get the stream up, we'll put the phone on while we're getting ready, and we went 2-0 down with it. Right, let's go out. Let's just leave it there.
Horrible. Awful. So moving on to Tuesday, we've already kind of talked about changes. Yeah, Nick, you said you expect probably 10, 11, something like that.
I've had to second guess the team. I think Rauter will come in and goal. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Oviedo starts at left back. Leuvens, Ozturk, right back.
Taylor played there possibly, in the last game, didn't he?
Taylor again.
How far away is Don Love and Denver Hume?
Denver Hume's going to be out for 2 months.
Extra.
Because he's had a knee operation now. So he's out now for 8 weeks minimum. So 8 weeks out, and then he's got to get back up to speed again.
Bit of a worry, isn't it? Because he was out for nearly 2 years with a knee injury.
Yeah, so that
when he was younger,
that's a big worry, I think. Whereas, funny, because we're talking about, I've got off tack here. I've not got off track again.
Fault.
But in fairness, that we were talking only a month or two ago at Coventry when Hume played. You got Hume at left back. You got Oviedo. You've got James. You've got a surplus of cover at left back. Even Flanagan can play there, and at a push, Matthews can play there. So suddenly you've got five or six left backs. Well, now you're down to, you could lose Oviedo in January. You've got Hume's going to be out for 2 months minimum. If James picks up an injury, then starting to look who's going to play left back. So from that embarrassment of riches, you could be down to the bare bones.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to what the team will be, O'Nien and Power, I guess. He might even play Power and Mumba and push O'Nien further forwards. And then do you bring in, does Jake Hackett come in again? Because I thought he did really well against Morecambe. He might even play Bainbridge again at the back instead of Ozturk and play Leuvens and Bainbridge. He might go three at the back again. It's, I think at least he's got options.
You think Watmore right wing?
Watmore right. I'm assuming Watmore will play right wing.
So are you pretty strong that you think Watmore's
well, start? Jack's pretty much said again on Saturday after the game he sees Watmore starting on Tuesday.
That's good.
So I think, you know, I think they'll aim to play him an hour again. Or not on Tuesday. See him playing an hour again. Who goes up front? Sinclair? Probably be the obvious choice to give him a
with Watmore, maybe.
That's how he played. Yeah. He played Kimpy Ogre against...
he did. But Morecambe he couldn't because he was away, wasn't he? With
It was sort of the whole game.
He wasn't on the bench on Saturday, though, was he?
No, he wasn't.
So maybe they left him out of it to keep him for Tuesday, maybe?
I think so. You know, you can fashion an 11 out of it because you know he's going to... His priority is going to be Accrington.
The thing is as well, though, Notts County's priority is not this cup.
They're really
struggling at the bottom.
But actually, because it's interesting now that Neil Ardley's gone in, are we going to get an AFC Wimbledon type approach? Throw these big men in there, David Vaughan. And and then, of course, John Stead. I mean...
Is he still there? Jesus.
Is he still there?
He's still there. John Stead is still...
I mean, will be still there? No?
No. Sure isn't. But John Stead is... and we know
he's got a good record against Bradford. That was one of the worst years of my life.
On Saturday, we're down at Accrington and they are in stinking form at the minute. They've not won.
Do you know John Coleman? Sorry to interrupt, but John Coleman, I was hearing last night, and his assistant, they've been in charge of over 1,000 games at Accrington.
Because he left, he went to Rochdale and then he came back.
And that is absolutely extraordinary, bearing in mind he's still not actually very old. You know, I think I've been commentating for nearly 30 years and I've commentated on about 1,300 games and it seems like a lifetime. And you think to manage the number of games he's managed and still be the age he is, I think, whoa.
I'm surprised. That's actually... How many Sunderland games have you done?
13. Well, Sunderland games probably must be 800 or 900.
You should have a counter.
I've got a list of all of them.
You have got a list.
They are all written down.
You should have a little scoreboard.
That'd be a bit like when Pelly got his 1,000th goal.
Yeah.
I should work out the Sunderland games because I've got them all written down. It's just a case because I've got a list then. But at the moment, I'm thinking I've got a tally of 1,300 and whatever it is because that's Carlisle, Newcastle, Sunderland and whatever five live games I've done. So that's in the big total. So I don't need to now... Cut out.
Yeah, because if you did your 1,000th game, I mean, yeah, you got on the pitch.
It's 16 seasons, isn't it? 15 seasons, 16 seasons. So, well, yeah.
Spotlight would be on it.
We'll do a half-time presentation. It'd be brilliant.
We don't need that.
I can't wait. Anyway, back to Accrington.
Want to leave at half-time.
Accrington not won any of the last six, lost the last three league games.
I didn't even know that. Came
off the bye. I didn't either.
They've kind of just went under the radar for me then. Like,
they played a lot of cup games. I think they've played three cup games.
They beat Cheltenham yesterday in the cup as well, didn't they?
Yeah, that's why I went league.
They started the season really well, didn't they? So they've obviously got something about them.
But I think it's when you play them, can you keep it up? You see newly promoted teams do it all the time. Blackpool did it, Hull did it, where they come up.
Luton are doing it in style at the minute.
Yeah.
And you look back to the point that Sunderland got at Kenilworth Road, and I remember the day, you know, there were a lot of people complaining it was 2 points dropped. It's actually now looking like 1 point well gained.
Were the only team that get tanned off the moment, I think. But this game on Saturday, though, I think it's going to be an interesting one for the players. It's a big incentive when you think that there's going to be more Sunderland fans there than
this. This is going to be like Walsall last week, cup tie, atmosphere, close to the pitch. I mean, it's a tiny ground and you are really close to the pitch there. The facilities are basic and it's going to be, you know, it will feel like a cup tie again. And actually, I think in those situations this season, Sunderland have come out really well. AFC Wimbledon, even they went goal down. The atmosphere there actually worked in Sunderland's favour and they got back in the game. Warsaw last week, I think, you know, that atmosphere with when you've got more fans actually helps Sunderland. I think that could be a big plus. You know, the old cliche, the 12th man next week could be the fans.
Well, for the fans as well, it's a bit of a day out because, well, I know Sunderland fans always treat every away day like a holiday, but I think this one in particular with it being a new ground and just that feel that we're on the verge of just... You know, nudging towards top spot because we've got to keep the pressure up on Portsmouth, and I think nobody more than the players know that. And this is a must win. It doesn't matter if it's away from home; it's a must win, as they all are at this stage. I think. I just think when you're battling for the top spot in the league, you can never afford to slip.
And it's funny because I think there's an incredible pressure on this team this season. You know, everyone says, oh, it's third tier, it's League One. But I've even in the Championship, even when Roy Keane went up that season, I didn't feel the pressure was on that team like in the same way that the pressure's on this team not to slip up. I think that season, was it West Brom were the ones that everyone was watching all the time, and Tony Mowbray, and there was that sort of, you know, that sort of almost the sort of war of words going on.
Yeah, you're going to finish ahead of us.
Yeah, and so that would be, and Derby, so it became a bit of a dynamic. This season, they've only lost one game in the league, and every game you go into, you think, right, is this the banana skin? Is this going to be the game where you slip up? And you come through it, they get through against Wickham, they get through against Walsall without losing it, and then you go on to the next one and think, oh, is this the one? Barnsley, God, this game's huge. And they come through it with flying colours. Then the next week it's Accrington, and you think, right, is this going to be the one? And it's constant, that sort of pressure. And I don't know how the players, whether they feel it in the same way. Do they feel that every single game they're going into is actually heaping pressure on them not to slip up, not to make a mistake, which is probably not a bad thing.
I wonder about the Accrington players as well, because they'll be this weekend, you know, that it's their ground, it's their home pitch, and they're actually going to be like the away.
Yeah, team. I think it's a big G up for the opposition all the time. A, teams come into the stadium alight. I mean, listening to Gareth Ainsworth and the Wickham players in the tunnel afterwards, and the way they were talking after the point they got there, they really bigged themselves up for that game because they were playing at the stadium alight. The same way, I think players, when Sunderland go away, this is their biggest game of the season at home, and I think it is for them a cup tie again. I think they look at it in almost the same way.
Kat McGeoch, are they likely to be back at the weekend?
I think McGeoch is. I'm not sure about Kat.
And we've got some Twitter questions before we sign off. So IL Hooper asks, have you ever seen Benno smile? If so, what was the moment like? I've seen him smile.
He does smile, but generally when he's being mischievous, to be honest.
Well, did you hear him celebrating Madge's goal?
Yes.
Howling
Wolf.
I bet he had a canny smile on his face then.
Yeah, he did.
They made a big deal out of it on the radio, didn't
he? He was actually killing himself the other week. So what was the player that had it pronounced? It sounded like t-t-t. So he tutted in the second half. And he looked at me then because he'd made a joke. And he was smiling then. He was just so pleased with himself.
That doesn't obviously translate to everybody.
But this is the issue. Benno, that doesn't really work on radio. But we'll work on it over the next 15 years.
How long have you been together?
15 years. We're only just starting out in radio terms and trying to get him to actually understand the medium.
Fair play. Billy Morgan asks, Defoe as player stroke coach next season?
That's not going to happen, is it? I think he's probably very happy down south, and there's a plethora of clubs who would love to take Jermaine Defoe, even at his age, not Sunderland.
That's answered it.
Yeah.
And I would love if Defoe came back, though. It would be nice.
It's fantastic, to be honest. He's too good to be playing in League One.
All right, you just stop pissing on my dreams, guys. Right?
And any club going for promotion in the Championship is going to try and throw money
at him. Yeah,
it's a bit of a Sam Allardyce situation where, you know, the last 6 months, the last, you know, throws of the season, get him in, okay. Hit your targets. That's the type of player. Yeah. Maybe not firefight, but I think someone like Sheffield United, if they brought in a Defoe type player.
To be fair, Premier League team would use them to firefight. You know, if there was a team at the bottom of the Prem, you know, if West Ham were really struggling.
Cardiff maybe, or someone like that, or a Southampton.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't see Cardiff, they just do throw-ins.
Aye, but I think, well, we didn't exactly play brilliant football and he played for us and he still got, what, 15 goals up?
I think it's 17, didn't he, one year?
Aye.
Get 70 in the year, we stayed at Wonder Allardyce.
I can't remember. I just remember him scoring nearly every week that season.
Yeah, he did. Final question from Adam Kane. Apart from the great start of the season we have had thus far, is there anything that we are lacking to give us the full domination in this league and be on top of the table by the end of the season? So we've
having a big, solid, either, well, centre-back and centre-forward.
Do you reckon, I mean, when's Wyke due back? Because he had a setback.
Soon. Jack Ross has been quite optimistically about him, actually. So I don't think it's far away.
I wonder if he might be one that might be amongst the subs on Tuesday, maybe.
I don't think it's far away. Yeah.
It's either going to be that game or maybe the cup replay next week.
He's always said it was going to be around now before Christmas that he would...
He's trained for a while now. The club's been doing quite a lot of media around him, training and stuff.
I think we're looking for an extra striker in the summer, weren't we? Which we didn't get. Do you think they will look at a striker in January? I'm thinking Tom Eaves.
The thing is, right?
Looks like it.
The thing is, that what the position we're in now, although we're doing very well, is that anybody who's any good in our team is an option for a club in the league above. And when you look at Josh Madger's contract situation, if the club can't get him to sign it, then I think they would be stupid not to take a good offer on him. And I know people will think, well, that's his top scorer, and we did that with Grabban last year. And I just think that if we're going to set ourselves up to lose out on a lot of money on a player who could potentially leave for free, then that throws a spanner in the works.
I mean, there is that scenario that a team could come in and offer the 6 million, say, that they want would take for Madger, but actually that 6 million could buy you a very good League One centre forward to take you up, because that's ultimately all it's about.
Could get you three or four good players.
And then ultimately you've done good business, because you've got your return on Josh Madger. You've also got your players in to get you out of League One, because it could go either way. I just think it could swing either way. I mean, the noises coming from the club are that they're fairly confident that Madger's going to sign a contract, but that's great, because then you've got him tied down. That still doesn't preclude the fact they can sell him. So yeah, it just means they're going to get their money back.
I'm just a little bit worried about how long it's taken. I know the club are saying this, that and the other. Like, Charlie Methven was here last week and he didn't really want to talk about it, which is understandable. He did say it wasn't really his area to, but he probably does know a lot more than he let on. And I think that's what's maybe a little bit of a frustration to fans, is that we were told about these contract talks probably 2-3 months ago. And
but people do say, why does it take so long? And my guess is because they're being offered significantly so much less money now.
Yeah.
And I think where the issues are arising are that the agents will be trying to thrash out some sort of deal whereby if you go up into the Championship, you'll get a percentage rise. If you get up to the Premier League, you'll get another percentage rise. It's dealing with that sort of sliding scale of wages rather than actually wanting to stay here or wanting to leave. But I think that's the problem.
It might not necessarily be the players. I'm not pinning any sort of blame. Like, why aren't they signing the deal? It's exactly as Nick says, but the situation the club are in is if they get to January and they're like, right, well, we need to know what's going on. I think we've got to, whatever goes on, whatever happens, we've got to know that they've done it for the right reasons now. It's not like in the past where we sold, for instance, Jordan Pickford because we were desperate for the money. We know that's not the case now.
And obviously, bear in mind, it's not just Madger. There's Gooch, Honeyman, Hume.
The Honeyman.
Stuart said, didn't he, about Honeyman, that they're not so concerned about that because he's got
five or six.
Yeah,
there's players, aren't there? Matthews. I mean, there's quite a few that all need to be sorted out. And, you can see why then these things tend to drag on, because if you're then trying to make meetings with agents and so on, and you're dealing with five or six contracts, then that you can see how these things get.
Yeah, maybe they're relaxed about it. Maybe we're sitting here scratching our heads and they're just relaxed about it. They know that they're fairly confident.
Think of it again as a Premier League thing where you worry, that a contract's coming up 6 months in advance, whereas we're actually in League One and that business is always done at the end of the season. That generally players don't sign contracts.
Yeah, and at this level, especially players who back themselves, who are wired up right and take right advice. They don't, if they're thinking about themselves, for instance, in this situation, they'll back themselves to make it to the end of the season. They'll go, well, I'll find a club, regardless, a good club. I'll back myself to play in the league above, maybe. So if Sunderland don't go up, then I'm well within my rights to then move on.
I think that's
fair enough, isn't it?
I think there's a lot in that. And I think there's also, at the moment, because the mood amongst the players is so good and the team spirit is so good, I think if you're a young player and you're enjoying playing football here at the moment, despite the potential lure of a big money move somewhere where you're going to end up sitting on the bench, would you rather be playing and enjoying what Sunderland are going through now and enjoying a promotion and then looking at the future? Exactly. So I think, which is a time in a way when we were talking, when Osorio moved and saying, oh, well, they've let him slip through the net, blah, blah, blah. It's actually a time. He's always the timely reminder that this is, that you could actually be in a similar situation and find yourself at a Championship or Premier League club where you suddenly disappear, and why give up what you're enjoying now?
Okay, well, I think we'll call that it. We've got Matty Piper coming out. When we're releasing that, Gav?
I don't know, because obviously
about December.
We've got a nice. We've worked quite hard, haven't we, Connor? So
we have.
December means we've got lots of shows already recorded, ready to go out.
Yeah.
So, then, yeah, I think we'll have, maybe this week or next week, we'll let people know when that's going out.
We've also got Paul Hedrington. That'll be going out at some point.
Yes. Paul was Rob Mason. Covered the Northeast teams for a lot of years, and he's just retired.
Yeah, just retired, isn't he?
Yeah.
Paul, yeah. So well, he's semi-retired.
Club historian Rob Mason.
Rob Mason was a really good one. I'm excited.
So we've got that coming out. Yes, like you said, Matt Piper. We've got a
George Forster. Are you not?
Yes, George is coming up. Yes, in January. Yeah.
Yeah, it's January 23rd.
Yeah, sometime in January.
You're gonna get Benno in and talk about his comedy routine.
We would have Benno in if he was wanting to come in.
There we go. We're gonna get you both in together. That might be good if we get you both in together next time you're in.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Plenty of interesting stuff. We've also got, some good stuff. Phil Bardsley is going to be doing a podcast with us, which is probably going to be out June, December. Why not?
No, you're going to go with them now.
Two other ex-players.
Do a guessing game. Why don't you just make them guess?
No, we'll not do that.
No.
Okay. Nyron Nosworthy will be on at some point, hopefully before the end of the year. And then maybe in the new year, we should have Vito Minoni.
So there you go.
Plenty to look forward to anyways. But the problem with us naming all these names, people can ask when they're out, and we don't even know. So just keep your eye, your ears peeled. Just be safe in the knowledge that we're going to keep rolling out the good shows.
Yeah, and there's some other ones that we can't disclose yet. Shall be happening in the next year.
Secrets.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.